TED Audio Collective.
It's TED Talks Daily. I'm your host, Elise Hu. There is a familiar narrative in college admission essays, the trauma to triumph story. You know what I'm talking about. In her 2022 talk from TEDx UBC Studio, student reporter Tina Yang makes us think about the consequences of all of us expecting stories like this and what universities could do about it after a short break. Support for TED Talks Daily is from Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You can say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit Progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Support for TED Talks Daily comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/TED Talks. That's odoo.com/TED Talks. Odoo, modern management made simple. Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
There's a story of mine that I've told about a million different times, and it goes a little something like this. When I was 10, my family and I packed up our entire lives into large suitcases and dragged them across the Pacific to a foreign land called Canada. I was put in a school where I was the only Asian kid in my grade, and I got teased for my broken English, Asian features, and funny-smelling ethnic lunches. The racism was a real doozy. But don't feel bad. Through the magical healing powers of extracurricular activities and pure perseverance, I stand before you today a new woman, healthy, healed, and extremely employable. You wouldn't even be able to tell from just looking at me that I was once the weird little immigrant girl who begged her mom to pack PB&J sandwiches so she wouldn't have to eat lunch alone in the bathroom. This is a story that I've told in academic essays, job interviews, and even in the very application that got me into this fine university. It's also a story that, despite all of its truth, I've come to hate. Now, this is a story that I don't have copyright claim over. It's one that continues to be regurgitated by immigrant kids all across the country to be served on a silver platter to prestigious universities, who chew these stories and spit out acceptance letters in return. The contents of the story may change. Instead of a difficult immigration experience, it might be the death of a loved one, a chronic illness, or a racist encounter. But what remains constant is the moral. A bad thing happened to me, but it made me a good person. This is part of the larger phenomenon that I'm here to talk about today. The overwhelming pressure being put on high school students to write about their deepest traumas in their college applications, with the hopes that they seem resilient and interesting enough to be given a spot. I believe that these are not only bad metrics by which to evaluate applicants, but also incredibly harmful to the storyteller themselves and risks reinforcing existing inequities in higher education. There's also pressure that's being amplified by admissions counselors themselves, who play a huge role in influencing what applicants decide to write about. Take, for example, this tip from the MIT admissions blog, where the author compares two different introductions for a potential essay. The first one reads, "I'm honored to apply for the Master of Library Science program at the University of Okoboji. For as long as I can remember, I've had a love affair with books. Since I was 11, I've wanted to be a librarian." The second introduction reads, "When I was 11, my great aunt Gretchen passed away and left me something that changed my life, a library of about 5,000 books. Some of my best days were spent arranging and reading her books. Since then, I've wanted to become a librarian. The author notes that the second introduction is much more striking and leaves a much better impression. Consider another tip from collegeessayguide.com, where he advises students to get personal. He says, weirdly, including painful memories and what you learn from them usually helps a personal statement meet the goals of a college application essay. You come off as humble, accessible, likable, and mature. Confessions from admissions officers themselves can also be telling. Aya Waller-Bay, a former admissions officer from Georgetown University, said in a Forbes article that, within months on the job, I saw how the personal statements of Black and other racially minoritized students differed from those of white applicants. Black students highlighted resilience through stories of survival, while their counterparts wrote casual essays about service abroad and sporting championships. Black students shared their pain, white students shared their passions. Now, lastly, and perhaps the least reliable source, is my own life. I remember feeling this way when I was applying to universities. Like I had no other choice, no other experiences worthy of mentioning, and no other merit beyond the fact that I had thrived despite what I had gone through. I even remember worrying that my tale wouldn't be harrowing enough after hearing from a counselor that writing about immigration has become a bit of a cliche because of how overused it is. So, what's the university's role in all of this? And why are these stories even harmful to begin with? Well, I believe that using your college application essay to discuss your trauma actually doesn't help you process it. And there are a couple different reasons why. First, writing about a difficult experience is, as you may have guessed, difficult. Not only do you have to relive the event itself, but you also have to actively suppress any negative emotions that arise during the process. And that kind of emotional labor can be taxing for anybody, but perhaps especially so for these young applicants who haven't had enough time on this world to process the terrible things that have happened to them. For that space to be one in which they're confessing to a faceless stranger who gets to make the most consequential decision of their adolescent life imposes an incredibly heavy psychological burden. I mean, imagine if you walked into your therapy appointment and your therapist tells you that they're not going to respond to anything you tell them except with a rejection or acceptance email sent months later. And also that whatever you tell them will determine the trajectory of your entire academic and professional career. Hard to imagine that being therapeutic. Secondly, the trauma essay makes one assumption that is extremely problematic. It's not always the learning opportunity through which you can gain more confidence or develop better time management skills. Sometimes it's just a sucky thing that really sucks. And asking students to prove how they turn their pain into progress ignores this truth and falls prey to the toxic positivity narrative that everything happens for a reason, ignoring the very valid resentment and anger that many victims still feel. Lastly, the things we write aren't just informed by our experiences. They shape how we view those experiences as well. And if we're writing about our trauma to prove to an admissions officer that we are worthy of a decent education, then it becomes necessary to sanitize our pain, to make it marketable and strategic, to scrub away all the suffering so all that's left is what will fit into the narrow margins of what is palatable. And this is what I see as being the fundamental contradiction at the heart of the trauma essay. It seems to give the writer free rein of vulnerability, but actually leaves them very little room to be vulnerable. Your story has to be just sad enough that it gains sympathy, but not so sad that it makes you seem beyond help. Just critical enough to inspire change, but not so much that it actually criticizes systemic structures. Just honest enough to seem real, but not so unfiltered that it creates discomfort. The protagonist also overcomes whatever struggle they're facing by the end of the 500-word count, instilling the reader with a sense of optimism that despite our deeply unequal society, it is possible to rise through the ranks and overcome all the isms. This, of course, is not the reality of our world today. And for me, this looked like settling for the familiar story of the stinky lunch, one that's been told so many times that it's devoid of any real meaning. Instead of talking about the ongoing social and political disenfranchisement of immigrants, the permanent loss of cultural identity that I suffered, or the sense of disbelonging that still haunts me every time I make a grammar mistake or someone mispronounces my name. These are all struggles that never really go away, but are carefully tucked away in my essay because they don't fit the linear narrative that is being constructed. But how are universities to blame for all of this? I mean, they never explicitly ask students to trauma dump in their essays, and many admissions experts have actually come out and discouraged discussing explicit trauma in essays. However, I still don't think that universities are blameless. The reason why the trauma essay is so ubiquitous is because it seems to be working. Anne Trebek, who helped low-income high school students at Oberlin College write their essays, expresses the ethical dilemma that she faces. By pushing students to reveal their horror stories, I risk taking away their dignity. But by not pushing, I could be hindering their chances of getting into their dream school. Whether trauma essays and acceptance letters are actually causally correlated is impossible to tell from the outside. So this could all just be speculation and myth. But in failing to resolutely clear up these speculation and myths about whether trauma essays are rewarded or discouraged, universities are indirectly enabling the rise of the trauma essay and all of its harmful implications. So what are they to do about all of this? Well, first of all, I think that this is a problem that goes much deeper than individual universities, and even perhaps the institution of higher education itself. It's rooted in the cultural obsession with appropriating trauma and making it consumable, as well as the systemic tendency to tokenize oppressed people and their experiences. But there are still things that universities can do to make things better. First, they can be more transparent about their admissions guidelines. If it's really true that they don't want to reward trauma storytelling just for the sake of it, then they should be more forthcoming about this expectation. They could also restructure their prompts to avoid putting pressure on students to talk about past hardships and adversities, and instead refocus prompts to ask students about their goals for the future and their academic interests. Secondly, admissions counselors should be trauma-informed and trained in working with BIPOC folk. As the unofficial gatekeepers to the secrets of getting into your dream college, they should wield this power responsibly and not pressure students to talk about traumatic experiences that they're not yet ready to talk about. Lastly, and this one's for anyone who's actually applying to a post-secondary institution sometime soon, remember that you are more than the bad things that happened to you. I know that when it seems like every other classmate of yours is writing an essay that could be adapted for an HBO original drama, that you may feel like your experiences are not worth talking about. But I promise that they are. You just have to find your voice and use it. Now, as much as I don't want to live that nail-bitingly stressful time of my life ever again, I can't help but wonder, what would I have written about if I got the chance to apply to UBC again? This time, absent the pressure to strategically use my immigrant background to gain sympathy points. Maybe I would have written about how I overcame my fear of public speaking and became comfortable with being the loudest voice in the room. Or I could have written about watching trashy reality television is what first sparked my interest in political science. Or maybe I still would have written about my immigrant story, because that was a big part of my life journey and still impacts me to this day. But I would have done it on my own terms. Instead of being written as a one-dimensional trauma-turned-triumph drama-drama, I would have been able to tell a story that actually reflects who I am today and acknowledge the fact that my journey is ongoing and it doesn't begin or end with my racial identity. This is the kind of ownership that I wish for everyone to one day have over their story. And now it's up for universities to decide whether they get to tell it. Thank you.